Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Thursday, December 7th, 2017. And with me today, I have John Martellaro. How's it going, John?
Hey, it's going great. I'm here.
Awesome. So glad to have you here. And Brian Chaffin, how are you?
That's a singularly interesting qualification that John, like, I'm great, I'm here.
Well, you know, there's some people that that's good enough. Just, I am here, therefore I am great. Maybe John's presence is what makes everything great.
Absolutely.
Yes. Yes, it is.
There we go. Therefore, by extension, Brian, you too are great.
Because I am here with John.
Yeah.
I feel like this is my Fight Club philosophy moment here.
Yep. I think you totally just found it. Yep.
Balderdash.
No, save that for later in the show, you know, just in case you need it. Hey, we have a sponsor today, and that sponsor is Eero, Wi-Fi mesh network system that I'm using in my place, and it's pretty awesome. So I'm really glad they are our sponsor today. And let's just hop into it. John, yesterday you wrote a piece where you talked about Apple security issues and why we have a trust issue with Apple. What exactly did you mean?
Well, let's back up a second. Apple, first of all, made this horrendous security snafu with High Sierra and root access. Mm-hmm. Then when they became aware of it and tried to fix it, and I think they have fixed it, there was an apology, one, which is good. And then there was a statement about an internal ongoing audit process. And then we haven't heard anything more that I know of.
Not yet.
Not yet. And I thought that left me with a kind of a bad taste in my mouth, because this was a major, major snafu and evidenced a supreme lack of Unix expertise on Unix holy ground. And I thought there needed to be more in the way of transparency about why it happened. And I talked about how Minutes has handled their mistakes. Mm-hmm. And two, I thought it required a thoughtful public process to rebuild trust. So those were the two elements of my article yesterday. I thought they did good, but they didn't do enough for everybody to say, okay, sigh relief. We understand what happened.
Near enough.
We understand why it happened, and now we trust them again. So that's an ongoing painful process.
All right. So, John, do you see a problem where Apple didn't do enough after after the whole root password thing? Brian, you're saying they didn't do nearly enough. Since John just started laying out his case, Brian, I'll give you a shot. What more does Apple need to do?
Apple needs to prostrate itself. Apple needs to get its corporate butt in the air and face down and say, we are so sorry. You know, this is an egregious breach of your trust, and you know, we absolutely promise that we're doing everything we can to make sure that it never happens again. And this is how it happened. And, you know, it was a simple confluence of error. I don't know. Apple needs to give us an explanation of what happened. Mm-hmm. This thing is serious.
Yeah, any other company you can imagine, Apple doesn't like to air its dirty laundry, but this is so serious.
They did with the maps, though. That's just it. This is so much worse than maps.
I mentioned that. The powers that be thought Scott Forstall was not doing the right thing when he did an apology, and he lost his job as a result. But in this case, which is a much more severe situation, much less has happened in a public way.
Much less.
Now, is it possible that it's much less right now because Apple doesn't want to start laying out the story until they've had a chance to do their audit?
No, I don't think that's the right way to do it.
But that is possible that is the cause of it.
Well, when they say audit, that's a euphemism for investigation.
Yes. And so, do you think that they're going to finish this audit or investigation or whatever they decide to turn it into, and then that's it? We'll just never hear anything? Like, we've already heard everything they're going to say about the root password bug?
I hope not.
I hope not too. Because I closed the article with a description of some painful steps that it would have to be taken and a more public accounting. And without that happening, without affirmation of fundamental change, public description of the fundamental change in management philosophy, and their return to a focus on and a celebration of Unix and the installation of a Unix or two expert and guru who can be an intermediary between management and engineers, that this is just going to turn into a running joke. And every time Apple makes a mistake from now on, we're just going to laugh and say, yeah, remember the root issue, and laugh some more. And so they got to heal this wound, and it's got to start early.
Yeah, and you got to get in front of it. Mm-hmm. Got to get in front of it. Don't let it just dangle. Now, it's also possible that one reason why Apple has been lacking on the public front here is that Tim was traveling in China. And I have a related observation on that. You know how Tim tweets pictures of himself with people everywhere he goes?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he didn't tweet anything from China, did he?
No, he didn't.
He sure didn't brag about, or he didn't show the world, here I am in China and talking the World Internet Conference.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, we had a tweet this morning about somewhere that he was, but nothing from China. Anyway, that's a completely tangential observation, but it is possible that him being in China is one reason why Apple hasn't been more forthcoming about all this business with the root access flaw, and not to mention all the other bugs that Apple is allowed to ship, and then reintroducing. Oh, come on, man! They reintroduced the root access flaw. Come on.
They didn't patch the upgrade. They didn't patch the 10.13.2 upgrade.
No, it was the 10.13.1 update. Right.
10.13.2 just came out. They didn't patch 10.13.1 to reflect the new state.
Right. It was a pretty miserable week for Apple. But anyway, my point is it's possible that Tim just didn't have enough time to deal with this because of his travel schedule. My guess is he could have found the time, but what do I know? I'm sitting here in my home office, and Tim is a...
Well, I have another piece of color
running
on this.
A multi-$100 billion company.
Another piece of color. Mm-hmm. In the past, a reader pointed out to me and asked me about this a while back, and I had forgotten about it. Periodically, Apple has always published a PDF document called Core Technologies Overview for each version of OS X, and the last time they published that PDF was for El Capitan. And so late last year, a reader asked me if there was going to be a Core Technologies Overview for Sierra, and I asked the contact, and it got kind of dropped through the cracks. So here we are, hi Sierra, and it looks like the Core Technologies Overview PDF document, which usually runs around 30 or 40 pages, never got published for Sierra.
And so that's interesting.
Bad sign that it's never going to happen for High Sierra either. And that's one of these inattention to the professionals that is maybe a side aspect of the Unix focus or lack thereof.
All right. So with the way things stand today with Apple, has your trust remained the same or has it diminished?
Me?
Yes, you, John.
My faith in Apple's Unix expertise is shaken, and it has to be restored by time and performance from Apple. It's not that I'm going to switch to Linux, but I'm going to be much more circumspect.
How about you, Brian?
Absolutely shaken. Recoverable, but shaken. Mm-hmm. And like John, I need to see action, and I need to see... I would like some commentary on this from Apple.
I would like some commentary too. And right now, Apple needs to re-earn its trust with me. So I suppose shaken is a good way to put it.
So Yesterday, I wrote about Apple hiring Michelle Lee as another television executive. She's going to be creative executive of apparently what is being called Apple Worldwide Video. Mm-hmm. And the first comment on the article was a reader who was saying, yeah, go ahead and hire some people who are going to, you know, make the Mac and iOS not buggy.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, there you go. I think that's there's a lot of sentiment like that right now.
Right now there is. Now, the reality is that I think that what's happening in television is probably more of a sign of actually of Apple actually diversifying its management ranks in a way that we would like to see, rather than it being a singular focus. But, you know, yeah, show us some results here, Apple.
Well, I talked in the article yesterday about the lack of celebration of Unix. Mm-hmm. And one is tempted to draw the conclusion that a discussion of the Unix underpinnings of macOS, it's okay to delete it, not talk about Unix in the concept in the perspective of an iPhone or tvOS, because people don't care about it there, but professional Mac users do. So this lack of attention and celebration of Unix focus caused maybe Apple to drift away a little bit. And by submerging the focus on the Unix aspects of macOS, maybe Apple thinks that they're, you know, making headway with more customers. But the Mac's not growing that great. I mean, they sell about 5 million every quarter. It's not exactly growing and growing. They've got a core group of people who buy new machines. But the fact is, macOS is great precisely because of the early efforts that people put into building the Unix infrastructure. Jordan Hubbard told me on Background Mode that when he came into Apple around 2000, the integration of Next Step and BSD Unix and the macOS 10 GUI was a mess. And there were all sorts of problems with authentication and libraries and directory services. And it took a long time to make the operating system coherent and function smoothly as we know it today. And it probably wasn't until Jaguar that it was a sensible, coherent, trustable operating system in all respects. So there was a lot of work to do by the pioneers, Avi Tavanian and Bertrand Soleil and Jordan Hubbard and others, who really took a lot of effort to make this into a first-class Unix operating system. And to see Apple betray that through carelessness was just sad.
Yep. And that seems like a perfect place to just kind of wrap that up. So, hey, we have a sponsor today, and that sponsor is Eero. And Eero has not lost my trust, so good for them. And that's because what they do is they make a Wi-Fi mesh router system. And what that does is that lets you have your primary Wi-Fi base station. In my case, that's the Eero second gen model. And then you have these little satellite base stations. In my case, those would be the Eero beacons. And they all communicate with each other transparently and seamlessly so that you have this extended Wi-Fi network. And your devices never have to think about where they are in relation to these different elements. It just all works, and your iPhone, your Mac, your iPad, whatever it is, they all end up talking to the right place to have the best connection that they can get, and it happens without you having to do anything. And setup for this is just like crazy simple. There's a free app you download to your iPhone, and you plug in your first Eero, and you do the setup from your iPhone, and it only takes a couple minutes. And then you plug in your beacons, and they get added into the mix, and you're done. So from the time that you get the package in the mail to the time that you can be surfing on a Wi-Fi network that is much faster than you had before, it's literally a matter of minutes. And part of what makes that faster is that they added in a third 5 gigahertz radio to the second gen Eero. So now it's tri-band, so that makes it twice as fast as the original model. And the original was already pretty fast because of the way it could handle the data passing through the system. So you get to do a lot more with a lot more devices all simultaneously, and it's like really impressive. I have not been able to bring my system down to its knees yet, and believe me, I have tried. So here's the deal. You need to go pick out the Eero system that is best for you. So head over to their website, Eero.com. That's Eero.com. And then pick out your Eero system. I have the second gen with two beacons, and I love it. So I'm happy recommending that. And then when you get to checkout, choose overnight shipping. And then enter the code TDO, and that's going to get you free overnight shipping in the United States or Canada. So you could order one today, have it show up tomorrow, and then you're done. You're set up, and you can go through Friday and the whole weekend and beyond with a really awesome Wi-Fi network setup. So that's Eero.com, and then choose overnight shipping at checkout, and enter the code TDO to get that free overnight shipping in the United States and Canada. Thank you, Eero, for being our sponsor. All right. The other thing I wanted to talk about, I feel like we need to loop back to Amazon Prime Video coming to the Apple TV, because, John, you didn't get a chance to talk about it when it came out, because I didn't have you on the show yesterday. And I'm just going to go ahead and point it out right now. You said this app is not going to be available until after tvOS 11.2 ships. tvOS 11.2 shipped on Monday, and then on Wednesday we got Amazon Prime Video. So you were absolutely right on when this app was going to ship.
Well, the reason I thought that was because the version of tvOS that had been running since the Apple TV 4K came out was messing around with the source material. It was taking SDR, standard dynamic range content, and auto-converting it into HDR, which often created visual changing the frame rate. Mm-hmm. It was doing some other things that probably upset Amazon in terms of wanting to deliver and have the Apple TV display the content as they intended it to be displayed. And so now everything's pretty cool with the Apple TV OS 11.2, where you can say honor and respect the settings of the original content in terms of the frame rate and the dynamic range. So I saw that coming, and it was kind of cool. What intrigues me about that app is what I don't know yet. I've heard some discussion. We talked about it this morning in the meeting about Dolby 5.1. It's so far, I've just started playing with it. It's not so easy to identify from the preview of the content what resolution it's in and what HDR modes it's in. Mm-hmm. I downloaded a quick video of Grant Chester, and I was surprised and pleased to see it was in 4K. Nice. But I didn't know that until I told my TV to display the resolution that it was seeing. I couldn't find it in the description of Grantchester on the app. So I'm still exploring that. But I'm really pleased to see that app finally come to Apple TV, because there's so much good content. And Grand Tour is available tomorrow. In 4K, I think it's going to be 4K.
And there's a lot of people that are really excited about that.
That's the Top Gear guys doing Grand Tour Season 2 on Amazon Prime. So that's looking forward to that. Brian, so there's a lot of learning to do yet for me, but I'm really happy.
Awesome. So, Brian, have you had a chance to play with the Amazon Prime Video app yet on your Apple TV?
You know, I haven't, but it's only been an issue of time.
Now, I totally get it, because it's... Yeah, we're busy people. I had a little bit of time to play with it, and that's primarily because I needed to get it installed right away so that I could see how the system worked and write about that yesterday. And so then last night, I took a little bit of time and just started popping into different shows to see how they looked. And I was very impressed with the performance, and the
me too.
That the interface could use a little bit of work, but I think it's better than the interface on my Fire TV stick. So I'm not going to complain too much.
Yeah, you know what? Apple hadn't cracked the code yet, or if they have, they haven't shown us. Yeah. Just saying. On a non-related note, I believe there is something we were going to mention about the it being Amazon Prime Video being available on third-gen Apple TVs.
Yes, yes, that is true. So when Amazon rolled out their Prime Video app update for iOS yesterday, one of the things that they said is that it was compatible with third, fourth, and fifth generation Apple TV. When Apple put out their press release talking about the app, they said available for fourth or compatible with fourth and fifth generation Apple TV. And Apple never bothered to respond to my request for information, for clarification. But later on in the day, the app just started showing up on people's third-gen Apple TVs, which is what we were speculating yesterday would happen if it was really coming out, because a third-gen doesn't have access to the App Store. So Apple pushed the app out. No need to do a software update. No need to restart the Apple TV. It just started appearing for people. So that was kind of cool. So if you have a third-gen Apple TV, you have Amazon Prime Video access.
Yay!
Yeah, that's really cool.
In 720p.
Nonetheless, you have Amazon Prime Video access.
But still, it's not too bad.
Yeah. All right. Well, John, I really wanted to point out, make sure everyone knew that you totally got it right on the timing for this app launch. And go you. We are out of time. We have to wrap up. John, thanks for being here today.
It was a pleasure.
And Brian, thank you for being here as well.
Yep. Thanks for having us. Been good stuff.
Absolutely. And Eero, thank you for being our sponsor. Head over to their website, Eero.com, Eero.com, and pick out your Eero Wi-Fi mesh system. And at checkout, choose overnight shipping and use that discount code TDO, so you get free overnight shipping in the United States and Canada. Thank you for that deal, Eero. And listeners, thank you for being here. We'll see everyone again tomorrow.